You know, I was reading an article this morning.
Congratulations. That's a big step for you.
We have some smart people on the phone here, so don't make me look...
Oh, sorry.
...more stupid than I am.
Anyway, sure it was quite informative and insightful.
There's a church... First of all, there's a church called Winning. or Winners or some...
Is it led by a silly
name.
Charlie Sheen is the pastor?
That's what I thought, right?
Yeah.
They serve tiger blood. Anyway, it's in Florida, and... I think someone involved with the church was involved with a Ponzi scheme, and the government is saying the church is responsible for paying back some of the cash, and like $1.5 billion, or I don't know, some ridiculous
lot of money.
The church is like, no, I'm not sure that they have a valley girl as their pastor, but
like totally not gonna happen.
No, anyway, money, religion, church,
and politics. We're not supposed to talk about them, right?
We're talking about them all right now.
Awesome.
This book is called The Wealth of Religions, The Political Economy of Believing and Belonging. And joining us on the phone right now is Rachel M. McCleary and Robert J. Barro. It sounds like is that a Spanish name? What is that, Robert?
Well, it sounds Portuguese, but my father actually made it up. His name used to be Berkowitz.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that sounds Spanish.
So he shortened it a little bit.
Sorry about that.
No, that's good. Welcome to the show, guys. This is, as soon as I saw this pitch come through, I thought, okay, I want to have these guys on the show because this is interesting stuff to me. So let me set this up. By the way, hello, Rachel.
Hello. Hello, Drew. Thank you for having us.
Which countries grow faster economically, those with strong beliefs in heaven and hell, or those with weak beliefs in them? Does religious participation matter? Why do some countries experience secularization while others are religiously vibrant? In The Wealth of Religions, Rachel McCleary and Robert Barro draw on their long record of pioneering research to examine these and many other aspects of the economics of religion. So this, I don't know, I find this so interesting. I have said that it seems to me like those countries that treat women like garbage don't seem to prosper. Now, every country in the world treats women like garbage, but you know what I mean. Like, there are just some countries out there where women are second-rate citizens, and they don't seem to prosper. So my math, and it's all anecdotal, I'm not going off of evidence like you guys are, but it seems to me like the better you treat women, the more... The higher the chance is that your country will prosper. Now, let's talk about facts and religious stuff. And let's go to that first question. Rachel, which countries grow faster economically, those with strong beliefs in heaven and hell, or those with weak beliefs in them?
Uh-huh. Well, we would basically say that it's a combination, because we stress belief over belonging. So we firmly show in our data that that you can't spend too much time on religious activity because that takes away from your economic activity. So a church that wants you to spend all your time in religious activities is actually draining you economically. But a church that inculcates beliefs and allows you to participate, you know, a certain amount of time, you know, this window, then that fosters economic growth, because what we're looking at are the effects of hard work, savings, thrift, all those discipline in terms of applying yourself to a certain type of activity. All those contribute to economic growth.
Rachel.
Now, for example, when we visited Tibet a long time ago, people there seemed to be spending almost all their time on religious activity, and it was clearly subtracting from their productivity. So there are certainly circumstances where you can go too far and just devote yourself to religion and then not do very well economically.
Okay, so I was hoping for a more definitive answer on this.
Yeah, we put money down on this.
That's funny, Tim. All right, let's move on to, well, not even move on. I mean, summarizing this whole thing. The United States of America is known as a very religious country, steeped in Christianity.
Right.
And those within Christendom, especially on the right or Fox News, will say things like, we have prospered because we have served, you know, because Jesus is our Lord and Savior. Robert, your response to that?
Well, I think the U.S. has a long history of a free market in religion, and it's promoted really a competitive environment that, although it was primarily a Christian country, it was also a very open country to different expressions of religious faith. And that openness was remarked on a long time ago by Tocqueville, for example, in his famous book in the mid-19th century. But I think this promotion of a vibrant market is central, not just Christianity per se.
Mm-hmm. Can I add to that?
Please. Yes, Rachel.
Another unique feature of the United States was that the United States was founded on a form of Protestantism, which believes in that every person is equal before God. So built into the political framework of the United States and in the Constitution was the idea that that concept of equality and freedom for everybody. But that was derived from a religion, from a form of Protestantism. And so that informed the economic and political system of the United States. So in that sense, the United States is unique, and that's been pointed out by many authors, not just us, that it has a religious foundation, those political ideals, which are no longer political. They're now secularized.
Right, right. You know, when I think about the wealth of the United States, my brain sort of says, no, it was built on the backs of slaves. That's how the United States got wealthy, because of slavery. And, oh, by the way, at that point in time, the Christians said, yeah, the Bible talks about slaves. It's okay to have them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think this was a terrible part of our history. I think it clearly subtracted from our economic development. It was mainly dominant in the South, in the U.S., and was a burden on the South in terms of its economy for many years after the Civil War. So there's no sense in which slavery was part of the early economic growth of the U.S. or why it sustained economic growth over a long period up to the Civil War. I think it's exactly the opposite. I mean, the unfortunate thing is that we couldn't have ended slavery without having the major war. I think that's a terrible aspect of that period.
Interesting. Okay.
You know, it wasn't my major field in economics by any means, but I always thought religion was an important part of society and an important social determinant. And when I combined forces with Rachel, who has more of a background in religious studies, then I was able to put my interests in religion, which had been there before, together with my economic expertise to try to do a formal analysis of it. So it's really the combination of the skills that Rachel and I bring that I think produced some success in terms of our enterprise.
Of course, Rachel McCleary is a lecturer in the Department of Economics at Harvard University, just a little place down there in the United States. Maybe some of you have heard of it. Her books include the Oxford Handbook of the Economics of Religion. Now, there's a specialty. And Robert Barrow is the Paul M. Warburg Professor of Economics at Harvard. His books include Education Matters, Global Schooling Gains from the 19th to 21st Century in Economic Growth. And they're both in the Massachusetts. They're in the northeast of the United States. It's one of the hardest words to say. Rachel, if you were to choose where you were going to grow up as a young woman, taking into context the stuff that you guys just researched here in the Wealth of Religions, what country, as a young woman, would you want to have grown up in?
Hmm. Wow. I grew up in Bolivia, and having grown up in a foreign country and then coming to the United States as an adult, I have to pick the United States, but I'm also religious. So you see, I would pick a country that would protect my right, my freedom, my religious freedom to worship as I choose. And so to me, that's extremely important, having that liberty.
So in other words, as a young woman, and again, taking into account the wealth of religions, the political economy of believing and belonging, and I know it's not popular these days to say this, but I'm going to ask the question anyway, and you guys can pass the buck or do what you want. Click. That was me hanging up. That was the hanging up sound, Tim, in case you didn't know what that was.
Okay. Yeah, I'll mark that down.
Would you choose a Muslim country?
No, I would not.
Okay.
I would not choose a Muslim country for many reasons. I mean, they Yes,
but you've just said
I'm a woman.
You've just said in your book, you've said that, you know, there's some definite political and economic benefits of growing up in a country of believers.
Right, but who respect my freedom.
Right.
So you see, Muslim women are not allowed, don't worship in a mosque. They worship at home. They're restricted in terms of how they wish to behave, how they wish to dress, how they wish to study. Some of them don't get an education. And in those terms, I wouldn't grow up in a Muslim country.
You know, from an economic standpoint, I mean, the strong religious beliefs in Muslim countries might be a plus. But there's other religion, political, economy aspects of Muslim countries that tends to be a substantial negative. This is particularly in terms of the role of religion as a regulator of economic activity and as a regulator of things people can do in their personal lives. I think these regulatory aspects of Muslim economies explain why that region of the world, in fact, has not done very well economically for quite a number of decades. For example, Muslim countries tend to have a lot of interference on credit markets, insurance markets, but also things like the role of corporations, which I think is very central to economic development. So I think on net, the religion structure in Muslim countries tends to produce a drag on economic activity, even though the belief part might itself be positive.
I want to bring in my counterpart, Tim, otherwise known as Tim the Tool. Tim?
Yes.
Do you have an educational question?
I guess my question is, and not meaning to just, you know, shoot turkey in a barrel here, but oftentimes countries will say that they are this or that, but in many ways are far from it. So is it fair to, you know, blame, you know, Islam or Christianity, or to, you know,
blame the religion of a country that says it's a religious country and this is their religion?
Because, I mean, we've got Trump who probably, you know.
I knew this was going to
direction. Just, for example, he claims a lot of stuff and he autographs Bibles. I don't see the correlation between the two. And I also know that, and I also see that in a number of countries where Islam is you know, the predominant religion, it's not necessarily the religion that confines and defines the people. It often is the powers that be that will misuse and
the
abuse.
Men.
Yes. So is it fair to attach any sort of religion to some of these questions sometimes?
Longest question in the history of interviewing.
Yes, but I did get Trump in there.
Guys, what do you think?
You know, I think there's a strong tendency for Muslim countries to have state religions and have a strong role in regulating the religion market. Turkey used to be a country that is almost exclusively Muslim, but it used to be more free. But it's in fact reverted back to the older model of a strong state role in the religion market. It pretty much has a state religion now, even though it doesn't admit to that. So there does seem to be this strong pattern of the way the Muslim religion interacts with economic and individual freedoms.
All right, let me wrap this up by, I don't know how to phrase this. Can you rank from first, second, and third, or gold, silver, and bronze? Thank
Canadian
you very much.
Fourth place.
If you're Canadian, we're happy with bronze in Canada, unless it's hockey. Who gets the gold star, who gets the silver, and who gets the bronze when it comes to the ideal religious setup for a country to thrive? Is it A, no religion, B, any and all religion, or C, a particular religion? Rachel, what do you think?
I would say any and all religion.
Okay.
I definitely believe in a diversity of religious participation, because competition is good. Competition is good for religion. It otherwise you get a monopoly religion. I mean, just think of Western Europe in the medieval age. It was a monopolistic Catholic region of the world.
Well said.
So people didn't go. They just didn't attend Mass. It was corrupt. The quality of the product was very poor. So when you have diversity of religion, you have competition. It's vibrant. It's pretty much like corporations competing. You want that. You want people to be engaged, and you want the product to change, the prices to change, the quality to change.
Okay. All right. Robert?
I think particularly over the longer history, the U.S. is the model for a free religion market and a thriving market. More recent developments that are important is the rise of evangelicalism, which is important in the U.S. and in a number of other regions of the world, including Latin America, and also the dramatic growth of people who have no religion. That used to be a very strong minority, and now, particularly in Western Europe, but some other countries, I'm sure including Canada, the fraction of people who now state they have no religion is on the order of 20-25% in many places. Mm-hmm. And that's a new development, which is part of thinking about the role of religion.
I'm sorry, maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm nerding out on this, but I think this is very interesting stuff. Yeah. And well-researched. And, of course, you throw the name Harvard around and, you know, that means you're right.
Harvard.
Rachel, thank you for joining us. Robert, same to you as well.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Drew. Thank
it's
you.
It's been a lot of fun. Thank you.
Good. All right. Take care, you guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
I need to stop saying bye-bye. Rachel, can you slap me every time I say bye-bye?
Oh, can I?
No.
All right.
The wealth of religions. Bye-bye, flight attendant. The political economy of believing and belonging. That's the name of the book. A couple of kids from Harvard.